वञ्चकपदुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुवैश्च प्रतितरं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Sinful Ajameel was close to death and called his son Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. When the Yamadutas came to take him away, snatch the soul from the core of his heart, his physical heart, they were stopped by the Vishnudutas. The Yamadutas said, "Why are you stopping us? This man is sinful. He has done this, he has done that, he has done horrible things. He needs to be punished, brought to Yamaraj and punished for his own benefit. So why are you stopping us?" And the Vishnudutas said that you actually don't know what is religion. And they asked several questions in text 38 and 39, which were requesting the Yamaraj's servants, the Yamadutas, to explain the principles by which someone is punished, someone is judged sinful, someone is judged sinless. What are the principles? They started to examine them. Because there are general principles, and then an individual is judged according to those general principles. So the Vishnudutta said, if you are actually the servants of Yamaraj, if you know by what principle someone is to be punished or not, you must explain to us the meaning of religious principles and the symptoms of irreligion. So you're saying that this man Ajameel is irreligious and sinful. What does that mean? Define the distinguishing characteristics of religion and irreligion. Sinfulness and freedom from sin, sinlessness. And what is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Who gets punished? What are the distinguishing criteria for one who is to be punished and one who is not to be punished? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable? Does everyone who engages in fruitive activities get punished? Some of them? How do you distinguish between those who deserve to be punished and those who are not? So they asked these questions. And the Yamadutas began to reply. Now today, Krishna willing, we'll discuss the reply of the Yamadutas from text 40 to 68. They reply, and it's a very systematic, logical reply. What I'll do is I'll read all the verses in their reply and just connect them together, and then we'll discuss them by reading Srila Prabhupada's purports. So the first thing that they said in reply to how do you know what is religious and what is irreligious, so the first words was Veda Pranihito Dharma. Veda Pranihito Dharma. That the Vedic literature, the Shastras, practically Pranihita. Pranihito means defined or prescribed. And then Dharma is, of course, religion. So religion is defined or prescribed in the Vedas. This is how we know what is religious and what is irreligious. And then, yadharmastad viparyaya, what is adharma, what is, and certainly he, adharma, certainly what is adharma, if dharma means religion, adharma means irreligion, is tadviparyaya, that which is opposite. So if one follows the Vedas, by definition, those acts are considered to be religious. And if one doesn't follow that, because the opposite, then those acts by definition are irreligious. Vedo Narayana Shakshad. The Vedas are none different. The same as Narayan, Swayambhu Iti Shushma. Maybe you could turn the volume down a bit, please. And this I have heard from Swayambhu. Now the Vedas are self-born, and we have heard this from Yamaraj. So Prabhupada's translation. The Yamadutas replied, that which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, religion, the religious principles. And the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraj. The supreme cause of all causes, Narayan, is situated in his own abode in the spiritual world. This is text 41. But nevertheless, he controls the entire cosmic manifestation according to the three modes of material nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. In this way, all living entities are awarded different qualities, different names, such as Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, different duties according to the Varnashram Institute, and different forms. Thus, Narayan is the cause of the entire cosmic manifestation. So the Vedas come from Narayan. They define religion. And who is Narayan? Who has the power to say what is in the Vedas, and therefore what is religion and what is irreligion? He is the cause of all causes. He has defined the duties for the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Sudras, for everyone in society. He has defined in the Vedas what their duties are. Everything comes from him. And actions according to the definitions that he has given are dharmic, religious. And actions that are not according to the definitions, that oppose the definitions that he has given, they are irreligious, adharmic. Now, so we have the source of the religious principles and how religious principles are defined. Then 42. The sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and the super souls in everyone's heart, himself, all witness the activities of living entities. So the living entity, by nature, act. This will be described in several verses down. And their actions are seen, witnessed, by ultimately the super soul and so many other different factors. There is no situation in which what we are doing is not seen, witnessed. That means the actions, religious or irreligious, are witnessed. 43. The candidates for punishment are those who are confirmed by these many witnesses to have deviated from their prescribed regulative duties. So those who have acted adharmically, sinfully, are those who have acted against the Vedic scriptures. And they, their actions have been witnessed, and they are liable for punishment. So everyone engaged in fruitive activities is suitable to be punished, subjected to be punishment according to his sinful acts. So according to how one has acted positively in line with the Vedic scriptures, or negatively what one has done opposing to them, everyone is suitable to be punished. You are sinless, O inhabitants of Vaikuntha, the Yamaraj said, but those within this material world are all karmis, whether acting piously or impiously. Both kinds of action are possible for them, because they are contaminated by the three modes of nature and must act accordingly. So everyone is impelled by the forces of nature Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dratya. We have to act. Maybe you can still just turn this down farther. We have to act. The soul by nature is active. And we have no qualification to act on the spiritual level because we possess false ego. Krishna bhule se jivana devahi mukh. Ata eva maya tare, we are placed in the material energy, under the material laws, under the three modes of material nature, and then that tendency to act is controlled, the force of action is controlled by the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. And according to how we act, we're either following the Vedic scriptures or opposing them on one level or another. And therefore, we are liable to be punished. In proportion to the extent of one's religious or irreligious actions in this life, one must enjoy or suffer the corresponding reactions of his karma in the next. So according to how we act in this life, in the next life we suffer and enjoy. Judged to suffer and enjoy by how our actions confirm or in line with the Vedic scriptures. Now, oh, best of the demigods, the Yamadutas address. We can see three different varieties of life which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. The living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life, these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. So these are goodness, passion, and ignorance. So if we act in this life in goodness, the Yamadutas are saying, then we can deduce, because we're going to get reactions according to those good acts we perform, then in the next life we will have a good situation. So goodness leads to goodness. If we act passionately, on the other hand, our future will be passionate, mixed happiness and distress. And if we act ignorantly, our future will be similar, foolish. So the present dictates the future. And now, they say something also very logical. Just as springtime in the present indicates the nature of springtimes in the past and future, so this life of happiness, distress, or a mixture of both gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious actions of one's past and future lives. So I am acting foolishly now, and that will dictate that I will act foolishly in future lives. But what caused me to act foolishly now is acting foolishly in past lives. So the past indicates, or the present indicates both the past and the future in this way. As the spring in the present, the spring season and the present indicates what the future spring seasons will be like and what the past spring seasons were like. So in this way, the present indicates the past and the future. Now, continuing with the logic of their presentation. The omnipotent Yamaraj is as good as Lord Brahma. For while situated in his own abode, or in everyone's heart, like the Paramatma, he mentally observes the past activities of a living entity, and thus understands how the living entity will act in future lives. So Yamaraj is empowered. He has a particular position, just like a government worker may have the power to examine everyone's tax records. But an ordinary person can't do this, but the government worker, because he's empowered, he has a specific position, he has specific duties, he has the power to examine everyone's tax records. If an ordinary person tries to do this, it's illegal, he'll be punished. So he's empowered by the government, by the organization, by the controlling power. He's invested with certain powers. So similarly, Yamaraj has as his duty a thankless task of being aware of everyone's actions and reactions and prescribing punishments and rewards. So he's able to do this just as the government agent is able to do it by the grace of the government. Similarly, Yamaraj is able to do this by the grace of the Supersoul. Text 49. As a sleeping person acts according to the body manifested in his dreams and accepts it to be himself. So what's the qualification of someone who's sleeping? He's forgetting himself. He's in ignorance. Forgetfulness of reality means ignorance of reality. It means that one is unaware. Unawareness means darkness. His knowledge is covered. So similarly, as the sleeping person acts according to the body manifest in his dreams and accepts it to be himself, so according to one's actions that one has performed in this life, one gets a body in the future, and then one identifies with it. So he identifies with his present body, which he has acquired because of his past religious or irreligious actions, and is unable to know his past or future lives. He thinks this is him. But in the future, he will identify with the body he gets then, and as in the past, he will identify with the bodies that he has had. So what is the cure for this? The cure for this ignorance is what? What is the cure for ignorance? Knowledge. Sanskrit word for ignorance?
Avidya.
And the Sanskrit word for knowledge is either vidya or jnana. So the cure for avidya, so it is said that the root cause of all sinful activities is ignorance, lack of knowledge about who we are. It is identification with the body, identification with the mind, and the attempt to enjoy oneself while the self is conceived of as the body or the mind. So then one acts whimsically, not according to the Vedic scriptures, but according to what he thinks will give him pleasure. So the cure for that avidya, or ignorance of who one is knowledge, or knowledge of who one is. So part of knowledge of who one is knowledge of who one isn't. So the situation of our real self in the midst of the body and the mind, etc. So text 50 and 51 describes the bodies, gross and subtle. Above the five senses of perception, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses is the mind. So there is the body, which is the senses, and then above that is the mind, which is the 16th element. Above the mind is the 17th element, the soul, the living being himself, who in cooperation with the other 16 enjoys the material world alone. The living being enjoys three kinds of situations, namely happy, distressful, and mixed. So happy, if he is in the mode of goodness, he enjoys happiness. If he's in the mode of ignorance, he enjoys distress. And if he's in the mode of passion, his reactions are mixed, happy, distress, etc. So the soul is in the midst of this, and he's identifying with it. The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts. The knowledge-acquiring senses, the five working senses, the five objects of sense gratification, and the mind. This subtle body is an effect of the three modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, and therefore, it causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. Bhagavad Gita describes this. Adhishtayam manaschayam vishaya upasevate. Based on the subtle body, which one takes with him. When one dies, the soul is enwrapped within the subtle body. One leaves the gross body behind, but one accumulates in his life so many desires. I want this, I want that. Get me this, I need this. The desires are themselves a result of activities. And the desires carry us to our next body. If we have animalistic desires, we'll have an animalistic body. If we have subtle desires for enjoyment, I really want to perfect my playing of the violin. In our next life, we'll have that situation. We'll be given the appropriate desires, ability, based on those desires, and a suitable birth that will nurture, allow us to nurture that desire and practice it. And that forces those desires, which are basically our karma, that forces our transmigration. This was also explained by Narada Muni to King Prachini Bharishad, and he said, therefore, the conclusion was, therefore, be very careful what you desire. Don't desire all these fruitive activities. They'll carry you forever, body after body after body. Sometimes a horse, I want to be able to run really fast. Horse, leopard, cheetah. I want to be able to fly high in the sky. What is this hang gliding? Become a hawk. Swim deeply under the sea, never having to surface again. That tribulation of surfacing again. Having to decompress at every stage as I go up from my diving. And on, rich man, poor man, wealthy, powerful, knowledgeable, on and on, famous, desires stirring the heart. But the soul is in the middle of that, enwrapped by that. When the living being gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. What does jubilant mean? Happy, so happy, because it's so subtle, the enjoyment. When he gets the body of a human, he is always in... Huh? Everyone can speak from experience what it means. Lamentation is what it says. Always lamenting. Why is a human always lamenting? He sees he has this. I want that. I wish I had it. Oh, I want this. Oh, always he had. So many desires, unfulfilled desires. A very limited capacity to fulfill desires, but an unlimited capacity to have desires. It's the formula for frustration. Frustration, lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. Why is an animal always afraid? He doesn't know when another animal is going to attack him. Doesn't know where he's going to eat next. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. Whether happy, lamenting, or afraid, he is miserable. Even misery and happiness. Why? What's the misery of happiness? What is the misery of happiness?
Misery ends.
Yes. When is it going to end? Oh no. Is it going to end tomorrow? Is it going to end in the next day? I don't know when it's going to end. Who's going to end it? Dust. So much misery, even within happiness. The foolish embodied living entity, inept at controlling his senses and mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of material nature, against his desires. He is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon. And the very thing that he creates out of his own energy traps him, becomes the trap and causes his death. In the same way, we are trapped with that which we create, our desires. We are weighted down by that, hemmed in. And he becomes trapped in his cocoon with no possibility of getting out. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus he is always bewildered, and repeatedly he dies. So one traps oneself. So one needs help to get out, the help of the Lord. Not a single living entity can remain unengaged, even for a moment. One must act by his natural tendency according to the three modes of material nature, because this natural tendency forcibly makes him work in a particular way. It's not that we can say that now I decide that I'm not going to fill myself with all these desires anymore, or from now on I'm not going to be attracted to a particular type of food or a particular type of clothing or a particular type of person. No, these desires are impelled by the gunamayi, the divyesha, by the modes of material nature, by maya, Krishna's own maya shakti, which is empowered by him. So therefore we are trapped in such a way, we're forced to act, because we're souls, active by nature, we're forced to act according to Maya's dictates, because Maya is so powerful, and we've taken shelter of her. Then we're forced to get so many desires and entanglements and reactions to what we get, and then we're forced to transmigrate according to how we act, and then we're forced to die, and we're forced to take another birth according to how we acted, and then we're forced to act again, and then die and take another birth. It's quite a mess that we've gotten ourselves into, a trap like the silkworm in a cocoon. The fruit of activities a living entity performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desire. So according to our karma, our desires are fulfilled, even though we don't know that it's our karma fulfilling our desires. We think it's our powerful actions that's bringing me the success I want, but it's all karma. This is the unseen cause. Avyaktam, unseen or unnoticed, unknown. This unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies. Because of his intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. So then the Yamadutas begin to explain Yamar Ajamil's situation and why he is sinful, but we won't get into that now. Let's read some of Prabhupada's purports on this, on these points. So very, very logical. The Yamadutas were not acting whimsically, nor were they acting foolishly or without reason, and yet they were stopped by the Vishnadutas. And the Vishnadutas are going to condemn their reasoning. But yet they're saying that everything that they're saying is based on the Vedas. Veda Pranahito Dharma. It's not at all whimsical, and yet the Vishnadutas are going to reject it all. So first we'll hear some more explanations, and then we'll hear what Ajamil did and the cause of his problems, and get some admonitions put into our own hearts, and then we will hear the Vishnadutta's reply to why Ajamil is not sinful, even though he has certainly violated everything. He is sinful according to what the Yamadutas are saying, but yet he is not sinful. We'll hear why. So be the pranihito dharma. The servants of Yamaraj replied quite properly. They did not manufacture principles of religion or irreligion. Instead, they explained what they had heard from the authority Yamaraj, Mahajanoyena Gita Sapanta. One should follow the Mahajans, the authorized persons. Yamaraj is one of the 12 authorities. Therefore, the servants of Yamaraj, Yamadutas, replied with perfect clarity when they said, Susruma, we have heard. The members of modern civilization manufacture defective religious principles through speculative concoctions. This is not Dharma. They do not know what Dharma is and what is a Dharma. So very dangerous in contemporary civilization. They say Dharma is you can eat, it's religious to eat anything you want. You can kill animals, you can kill fish, you can kill anything. Why? Because you need so much protein a day. This is the proper way to get protein. You like it. It is not at all adharmic, they say. But yet, by their philosophy, and they say cow's milk. Oh, this is very bad for you. If you have that, your cholesterol count will go up. You'll have 50 billion heart attacks. But red meat. Oh, very good. Very, very, very good. Prabhupada said, of course they say that milk is bad for you. Everything that we say the opposite. They say if you don't eat meat, you'll be weak. Your red blood cell count will be so low. But people can live on milk alone. Such a miracle food. So everything that, according to the Shastra, is dharmic, practically speaking, they say it is adharmic, irreligious, and vice versa. So it's imperfect, and therefore they lead people, and people naturally are simple, ignorant, and they lead. The leaders lead, and the innocent people follow, and they are led into hell. Horrible reactions. Alcohol is good for you. Intoxication is basically, maybe not too much, especially when you're driving, but it's basically good for you. You have to relax, you have to get your frustrations out. Sexual activity, good for you. Gambling, maybe it's not good for you, but it's good for us. We don't talk about that one. Anyway, everyone should have a good time. Have a good time. Go to the racetrack, go to the casino. Don't be extreme, but have a good time. Have a good time. Enjoy, like anything. No knowledge, and the people follow and get themselves into so much trouble, and no one questions the basic principle of why there is no happiness in their life, and why there is always the promise of happiness, only if desiring something other than the situation in which we're in, having something that we don't have now, that will bring me happiness. But obviously, everyone experienced, everyone over probably 6 months old already has enough experience to know that this happiness is so temporary that one gets from the combination of dhyantavantakanti anateshu ramate buddha. So what is dharma, Prabhupada explains in the purport, is ultimately sarvadhammam pratyaja. This is the ultimate dharma. The ultimate meaning of religion is to give oneself fully to Krishna, surrender to Him, allow to harmonize our desire with His desire. Irreligious religiosity, cheating religion, is when we try to pray to God and try to have God's desire and His will harmonize with our desire. That is materialistic religion or cheating religion. And the Bhagavatam does not speak of this religion. Prabhupada explains in the purport, it's Dharma Projita Kaitava It is cheating religion. It is materialism in the form of religion, and it is kicked out from the very beginning. And on the other hand, it propagates sarvadhamam pratyaja. We give up our conception of right and wrong and give our heart to Krishna and serve him with great devotion. And that form of religion, that highest form of religion, of giving oneself completely for Krishna's pleasure, that brings us to the spiritual world. It takes us out of the material world. That is called Bhagavat Dharma. And we're going to be here, Yamaraj himself explicitly explain what religion is, what the Krishna consciousness movement actually is, what Bhagavat Dharma actually is, later on in the next chapters. So then continuing, he says, where is this? This is religion, this is not religion. Who's decided? You're saying that man whimsically makes up religious and non-religious behavior. But who are you saying decides what is good and what is bad, what gets reaction? And the answer is Narayan, God, the Lord. And what's his qualification for doing it? Just that. He's God. He's the cause of all causes. He's the cause of these Vedic formulas, of these definitions. He has set up the material world. Everything is working under his direction. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate cha charan. And he himself is above it all. As the king is above the rules and regulations, they're his energy in that sense. So the Lord Narayan, he is not bound. Chibir gunamaya bhaver evi savamidam jagat. He is not bound by the good and bad, the modes of material nature of this world. He is empowering the law, the keepers of the law. He is not within the law. And the Supreme Narayan, Prabhupada explained to you, his purport is Govinda. So when one acts sinfully, there has to be a witness. So who is the witness? Prabhupada explains in the purport. The verse is explained, there are so many witnesses. The sky, the air, fire, the demigods, the moon, evening, day, night. So we sometimes, when do thieves like to steal? Usually they don't go in daylight, they go at night, but the night witnesses it too. So day, night, evening, twilight, all directions. There's nowhere one can go where one isn't seen. And ultimately, the ultimate witness, Upadrashta Anumantacha. Upadrashta means the overseer, the witness. Anumantacha, the permitter. Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara, the supreme controller. Paramatmati Chapyukta Dehesmin. He's within every living entity's heart, within every living entity's body. The Supersoul, Purusha Para. So the Supersoul ultimately witnesses everything. So then Prabhupada explains, I'll read the purport. The members of some religious sects, especially Christians, do not believe in the reactions of karma. We once had a discussion with a learned Christian professor when Prabhupada was in attending school, Scottish Church's College in Calcutta, this took place, who argued that although people are generally punished after the witnesses of their misdeeds are examined, where are the witnesses responsible for one's suffering, the reactions of past karma? So someone does something and he said, where are the witnesses then? If you believe in karma, where are the witnesses? To such a person, the answer by the Yamadutas is given here. A conditioned soul thinks that he is working stealthily and that no one can see sinful activities. But we can understand from the Shastras that there are many witnesses, including the sun, fire, sky, air, moon, demigods, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and the Supersoul himself, who sits within the individual soul, within his heart. Where is the dearth of witnesses? The witnesses and the Supreme Lord both exist. And therefore so many living entities are elevated to higher planetary systems or degraded to lower planetary systems, including the hellish planets. There are no discrepancies, for everything is arranged perfectly by the management of the Supreme Lord. So therefore everything is witnessed. So who is a candidate for to be punished? Everyone who has acted sinfully, he will get punished. Actions are judged. Everyone is active by nature. And in proportion to one's good and bad activities, one gets a result and gets a corresponding next birth and gets corresponding happiness and corresponding distress and a corresponding body and a corresponding family, a corresponding mentality, corresponding abilities, debilities, challenges, sicknesses, problems, good luck, bad luck, all corresponding according to one's karma, which is the reactions that we get according to the standards set up by the Lord in the Vedas. Then and Prabhupada explains about those reactions basically being goodness, passion, ignorance, giving happiness, unhappiness, and in between irreligiousness, semi-religiousness, religiousness. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature are visible in this life. For example, some people are happy, very happy. Some are very distressed. You see this everywhere you look. You see these mixtures in people. And everyone is thinking, it is me who is happy. It is me who is unhappy. It is me who is filled with these desires. It is me who is frustrated. But this is actually it's not actually me, but it's external to me. It's forced upon me by the subtle and gross body, by the modes of material nature, by Maya. This is the result of past association with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. Since these varieties are visible in this life, and if anyone doubts that they're visible, just walk outside and open your eyes, and walk in any city, you'll see people with good karma, you'll see people who are passionate, you'll see people in ignorance, see people with bad karma, see intelligent people, unhealthy people, lame people, broken people, people who are born to succeed and move the material energy, people who are born to suffer. It's all the modes of material nature. One cannot escape this in this world. So, since these varieties are visible in this life, we may assume that the living entities, according to their association with different modes of material nature, will be happy, distressed, or in between the two in their next lives also. Therefore the best policy, so here we are, so we're saying he's like this, he's in goodness, he's in passion, but actually I am also combination, very specifically tailored combination of the modes of material nature. So what's the solution to this trap? The modes control me now, they force me to act. They entangle me in the reactions, forcing me to take another birth in which I'll act and get more reactions and take another birth. What a trap! So what's the solution? What's the best policy? Is to disassociate oneself, Prabhupada explains, from the three modes of material nature and be always transcendental to their contamination. So how to do this? This is possible only when one fully engages in the devotional service of the Lord. As Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, mam chayovi vacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan, the modes of material nature samatityaita, and one will transcend through bhakti yoga brahmabhuyaya kalpate and come to the platform free from these modes, the Brahman platform, the Brahma platform, And in that nasochati nakangshati, one has no material desires, one has no material lamentations. So mam jayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan mod samatityaitan, one must transcend through bhakti yoga sevate and then come to the level of Brahman, Brahmabhuyaya kalpate. So this is what the ultimate and only solution is. To surrender oneself fully to Krishna. To give one's heart fully to Krishna. To use one's body and mind fully in Krishna's service with great dedication and great, based on great love. Unless one is fully absorbed in the service of the Lord, one is subject to the contamination of the three modes of material nature and must therefore suffer from distress or mixed happiness and distress. So just as the spring of the present indicates what future and past springs will be like, our karma at the present indicates what the karma in the past and future will be like. Then he goes on to explain Yamaraj. This is all done by Yamaraj, who by the grace of the Supersoul knows everything. He's empowered. And we identify with the present body. And this is ignorance. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is not good that we perform sinful activities. I'll read this purport, and the prescription is that one should get knowledge. And also in the Prabhupada explains that one simple proof of the fact of the law of karma is acting on all. He says the Bhrigu Samhita, which is a book that tells you what you were in your past life and future lives like that. And the solution is to get knowledge. Knowledge that we are not the body. Knowledge means to know our who we are, what our self is, who we actually are. And therefore, depending upon who we consider ourselves, we will act always in our self-interest. So if we consider ourselves the body, as everyone does, everyone without transcendental knowledge does, so therefore we will act on the bodily level, and it's thinking that's our self-interest. And if we think we're the mind, there's a lot of people who fully identify with the mind, and then they'll act to please the mind only. But who has knowledge? He who has knowledge knows that he is eternal, that he's a soul. And therefore he will act on that devotional level if he has full knowledge that the soul's position is servant of Krishna. I'm not actually going to read this. I'll just read one little part. As stated by Rishabhdev in Bhagavatam, Nunam Pramatakurate Vakama, a human being who is mad after sense gratification does not hesitate to act sinfully. Yad indriya pritaya aprinoti, he performs sinful actions simply for sense gratification. Nasadu manye, this is not good. Why? Yatta atmano yam ayam asan apikleshida asadeha, because of such sinful actions one receives another body in which to suffer as he is suffering in his present body because of his past sinful activities. And opposing that, what should one do? That's what one shouldn't do. Prabhupada explains the Vedic injunction is tamasama. One should leave darkness. Don't remain in darkness. Jyotigama. Go to the light. Try to go to light on knowledge. And what is that knowledge? The soul, the most basic knowledge, is the soul is entrapped within the gross and subtle bodies. Trapped within the gross and subtle bodies. The mind, intelligence, false ego is the subtle body, and they're filled with desires. And the gross body, trapped within that, dictating more desires. So Prabhupada explains towards the end of his purport that the soul is in there, and therefore his only concern should be how to satisfy Krishna. That is also what Krishna wants. Savadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam raja. People bewildered by material conditions try to be united. But although they strive for unity amongst men and nations, all their attempts are futile. What does futile mean? Useless. Doesn't work. Because it's based on the body and mind, not on the soul. Because we have different kinds of bodies. What is our relationship? Based on the body. But we have a true relationship with each other based on the soul, because we have a common father. Aham bijapita pada. Everyone must struggle alone for existence with the many elements of nature. Therefore, one's only hope, as Krishna advises, is to surrender to Him. For He can help one become free from the ocean of nescience. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore prayed, Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram pititam mam vishame bhavam budau kripaya tava para pankaja stitatuli sadvijam vachintaya. So this is the prayer of someone fixed in the knowledge of who he is, not wishing to be foolishly trapped and controlled by the modes of material nature, opening the door to so much future suffering. So this is the prayer. O Krishna, beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant. But somehow or other, I have fallen into this ocean of nescience. And although I am struggling very hard, there is no way I can save myself. If you kindly pick me up and fix me as one of the particles of dust at your lotus feet, that will save me. In a similar way, Prabhupada explains Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, Anadi karma phal padi abhavarnavajal tari bare nadeki upai. My dear Lord, I cannot remember when I somehow or another fell into this ocean of nescience, and now I can find no way to rescue myself. Prabhupada continues, we should remember that everyone is responsible for his own life. If an individual becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, he is then delivered from the ocean of nescience. So the living entity is within the subtle body, within the gross body. And to get out, he can't get out any more than the silkworm who has spun a cocoon around himself can get out. And therefore he's always bewildered, and repeatedly he dies. Then Prabhupada, the verse explains how the living entity by nature is active, and then we act, controlled by the modes, which are controlled by our past karma, which dictate our future karma, and therefore we entangle ourselves in so many activities. So it's all these desires, they sit in the subtle body, in the mind. The subtle body, the citta. So Prabhupada explains, if a human being, this is in his purport to 54, if a human being is taught to change his subtle body, changing the desires in our mind, in our heart, in our citta, changing the subtle body, if he is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna, at the time of death, the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Or, if he is still more perfect, he will not take another material body, but will immediately get a spiritual body and thus return home back to Godhead. So this is really the challenge of life. We act on the gross bodily level and do service, but the purpose of that is that those actions will change the subtle body, change the consciousness, change the desires, and to increase our desire to serve and love Krishna. This is the process of transmigration of the soul. Therefore, instead of trying to unite human society through pacts for sense gratification that can never be achieved, it is clearly desirable to teach people how to become Krishna conscious and return home back to Godhead. This is true now and indeed at any time. The solution and I don't think I read this before. The solution, since the living entity is associated with material nature, he is in an awkward position. We're stuck. We're trapped by the modes of material nature. So hard to change anything. Controlled by karma. So awkward position. But if in human form of life he is taught how to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or his devotee, Ishad Sangad Valiyate, this position can be overcome. So we'll conclude here by reading Prabhupada's purport, and then tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll complete this chapter by discussing what Ajamil did. And here is Prabhupada's purport. The word Prakriti means material nature, and Purusha may also refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one wants to continue his association with Prakriti, the female energy of Krishna, and be separated from Krishna by the illusion that he is able to enjoy Prakriti, he must continue in his conditional life. This is the mood of a conditioned soul. Prakriti, Purusha Prakriti Stohi. Situated within Prakriti, the living entity is trying to enjoy. If he changes his consciousness, however, and associates with the Supreme Original Person, Purusham Shashvatam, or with his associates, he can get out of the entanglement of material nature. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Dibyam Evam Yoveti Tatvata, one must simply understand the Supreme Person, Krishna, in terms of his form, name, activities, and pastimes. This will keep one always in the association of Krishna. Tattva deham punar janma naitimam etiso arjuna. Thus, after giving up his gross material body, one accepts not another gross body, but a spiritual body in which to return back home, back to Godhead. Thus, one ends the tribulation caused by his association with the material energy. In summary, the living entity is an eternal servant of God, but he comes to the material world and is bound by material conditions because of his desire to lord it over matter. Liberation means giving up this false consciousness and reviving one's original service to the Lord. This return to one's original life is called mukti, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Muktir hidvan yatarupam srupena vyavastita. Vyavastiti. Mukti means being situated in original freedom. Liberation means being situated in our original position as servants of Krishna. That's the solution. So tomorrow we'll hear specifically after. This is the philosophy of how one gets punished according to the Yamadutas, and now what Ajamil has done to make him liable for punishment. So in this way the Yamadutas are presenting their case why Ajamil should be punished, presenting their case to the Vishnudutas, who say that he should not be punished. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.